Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. Today I have an expert back on the show that I'm happy to have, Donald Jeffries. He's been on before when we talked about his excellent book, Hidden History. He's been on the show before when we talked about his book that I still say is the book of the century at this point. It's the survival of the human race. Everything depends on everybody reading this book. Survival of the Richest, How the Corruption of the Marketplace and the Disparity of Wealth Created the Greatest Conspiracy of All. So I'm really happy to have Don back on the show. Good morning, Donald.
Hey, thanks for having me, Maria.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, every news story, I think about your book. Okay. And listen, I've had a lot of books through the years. I mean, I've been doing this work for 20 years. Out of the thousands, this one is still the answer to everything. Okay. I don't understand why people don't get it that we, you know, the rich basically control everything and there's no way you can vote the rich out. But there's so much in this book that I'm so happy you came back on the show.
Well, that's very kind of you. And I think the reason that this, I put the subtitle The Greatest Conspiracy of All in there is because I think it is. You know, those of us that look into the corruption and politics and so forth, this is centuries old. I mean, I remember reading, I guess, back in the Middle Ages, the royalty would hire peasants to, you know, right. Wouldn't hire, I guess they just forced them to stay up all night and beat the lily pads out there because the croaking toads were keeping them asleep, underneath the windows of their castles.
Right.
So, you know, that kind of stuff has been going on forever, and it's just a shame that, I recently wrote about 1984 and the proles. I mean, I wrote it and on my blog that we are the proles. Mm-hmm. The proles are about 85% of Oceania, and they could have easily overpowered the party members in Big Brother, but they just couldn't get themselves off from being, or we'll talk about them being distracted about the lottery and football and all that stuff. And we just can't come together and realize that most of us are getting, the vast majority of us are getting screwed and to varying degrees. But people just seem to be okay with the system. And like we talked about, you know, they seem to cling to these Horatio Alger type of fairy tales that anyone can be anything they want to be if they just work hard enough.
Right. Climb the ladder. The richest country on earth, you too can be a millionaire. And people still believe that. That's the scary part. But, you know, rereading your book this morning, Donald, I have to tell you, because I have more news in my head than I ever cared to have, I said, you know, this book fits in so perfectly with just about every single thing going on. And I wanted to start, and you might find this a bit odd, but I'm going to start with that mass shooting in Parkland, Florida. Okay, when they first came out, of course, it's mental illness, the usual bullshit. The kid was on psychotropic drugs. Okay, we already know that. But I think I was one of the first ones to post a comment connecting that and these kids to wealth inequality. Now, when you look at a picture of that kid, you can see he's not normal, okay? And I don't mean that in a bad way, all right? But you can see that he's underdeveloped. All you have to do is look at his face. You see he's underdeveloped. You see that his brain development probably stopped a long time ago, besides the fact he was an orphan. But, you know, it took about 3 weeks later for some journalists to start making the connection to these mass shooters and the fact that they're raised on fast food and lower quality food. Then you add the cell phones that they shouldn't have at a young age for development, drugs. But no, you know, and they finally addressed the poverty issue. How much do you think wealth inequality is the reason for so many people being psychotic and shooting each other and whatnot?
Well, Well, yeah, you wonder, again, when I the example about the Middle Ages, even, you wonder why people weren't going crazy over their lives a long time ago. I mean, I've studied things like looking back in the Jack the Ripper era, if you read about the East End of London and the kind of conditions Jack London wrote about and George Orwell wrote about, even then, it's amazing. And I think what happens is, whether it's a school shooter or whatever you want to talk about, is I think that eventually a switch gets clicked, and especially if you're unstable to begin with, you have some other kind of issues going on, it's easy to see. It's easy to see why in the ghettos, you know, why so many people turn to drugs and so forth, because that's just what's there, and it's kind of an overwhelming, oppressive air that you can't go anywhere. This is reality, and you don't see any kind of path out of there. Look at the people in Appalachia.
Right.
Probably the greatest poverty we have in this country. They're not talked about too much. I mean, I think John F. Kennedy and Robert F. Kennedy, the first politicians to ever visit them, but they have no path, and they don't even, no one even has to tell them that the system doesn't even have to be rigged against them beyond the extent that they were born in great poverty. They just give up at a very certain age, and only, you know, most of the people still, with upper mobility in this country, especially from the ghettos, if you take out sports and entertainment, how many people rise up out of the ghetto?
Nice.
Very few. Very, very few. I mean, sure, I'm sure they'll find somebody, you know, the conservatives will find somebody or something, one out of a, you know, million.
Right.
That happened. It's kind of an exceptional case. And those stories are great, but what about the other 999,999 that don't make it? And that's what I think we need to look at. We don't have any upward mobility. When you have, I mean, the statistics I have in the book, and they've just gotten worse since then, but, you know, when you have something like, I think it's 3% of the students at the top 146 universities in America come from that bottom quarter in income-wise. And, again, if you take out the athletes who are just going to these big universities because they could play sports, it's probably a lot lower than 3%.
Right. Well,
basically,
remember, the uneducated are a lot easier to dupe. I don't know how else to say it, to dupe. You know, you talked about the ghetto, and I don't know how young or old you are, but when I was a kid, you know, my teen years, when Elvis came out with his song in the ghetto, they didn't want to air it. They didn't even want him to sing it on TV. And that was in the 60s. Okay, but he was telling the truth about what it was and that it didn't have to be that way. He tried to follow it up with If I Can Dream, and they tried to squash him on that on his Christmas special, but he insisted and sang it anyway. So you look at that, and, you know, I've been alive a long time, and all I can see is things getting worse, and I don't understand how the majority of people can't see it.
No, and look at Marvin Gaye, "Mercy, Mercy Me." You know, that was, I think, probably maybe early 70s, and you know, I remember listening to that song. And Stevie Wonder had "Just Enough for the City" or something. He had lots of songs about that. So black artists at the time were talking about it, but it really hasn't changed. You're talking about 40, even 50 years ago, and
Even Michael Jackson with his "They Don't Really Care About Us." You know, I can't tell you how many times a day that song goes through my head.
Yeah, and it's people recognize it, and even people like that. Although Marvin Gaye was one of the many people that lost money later, he really was underpaid, like a lot of these artists are. But he obviously made a lot of money in his lifetime. But even successful people can see it, can see what's going on there. It's just that. And everybody kind of recognizes it. It's like, we see this theme in Hollywood and movies where everybody recognizes that the corruption is at the top, and, you know, we see the corrupt businessman over and over again in Hollywood movies, and everybody recognizes it. They shake their head and nod, yeah, that's the way it is, but it never changes. It's like the Dilbert comic strips. I mean, if you go to workplaces all across this country, Dilbert, they will have the little pads of Dilbert in the break room or at somebody's desk, and people will read them and go, yeah, and of course that guy, I think it's Scott Adams, he's perfect. I mean, he lampoons the corporate world perfectly, but those same companies still follow the same idiotic policies that he's lampooning, even though all the workers and even some of the bosses kind of nod and go, yeah, you know, that's the way it is. So it's just so hard to change. I think it's, you know, Charles Dickens, as far back as the 1850s, one of his books, And I'm becoming more and more a believer in this as I watch over and over again politicians and just the leaders we have in our society. He kept talking about those that were in charge of his time. I think he was talking about the London court system this time, but it can be applied to any leadership position, I think. And certainly for our day and age, where he kept talking about they were experts in how not to get it done.
Right. Well, and it's like Congress. Sounds like Congress. What do they work 137 days a year and get overpaid for it? And they continue to give themselves raises, but not to the plebs.
Yeah, exactly. And we're, you know, they got the notion that, you know, it's probably going to eventually be that our politicians are maybe the only people left in America that have any kind of decent pensions.
Right.
And it's so ironic that the workforce, the taxpayers who increasingly are seeing their pensions eliminated, and younger people are never even going to have them to be eliminated, mm-hmm. are going to be, you know, working maybe two jobs if they have enough jobs out there to do it, but they're going to be working steadily. And one of the things they're going to be doing is providing these lucrative pensions for these politicians who never gave them representation, who are awful, you know, corrupt at the very least, and or be competent, I guess, at best. But to say that they deserve some kind of great pension for their performance is just laughable.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, when we were talking about the poverty, it was only about, I want to say, Donald, maybe the last 3 years that I heard a new expression. It started in India because of what was happening in India where the farmers were committing suicide. I don't know if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And they called it death of despair. And now we have deaths of despair happening in America.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I don't understand really. I mean, we kind of, especially, you know, lots of black people that I've known in my life, especially that come from poverty, they kind of make a joke out of it, and it's all kind of almost like an inside thing. They kind of embrace it and laugh about it. But most people can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine how, I know, just know in my own life, just recently with, you know, my people in my family having experienced jobs layoffs. I was laid off a few years back, but luckily I was brought right back. But just that little experience, just knowing things like, oh, I can't get pizza every Saturday night. Mm. I can't order Chinese food every week. When I went through that, which is, you know, first world problems, I admit.
Right.
But just having that, it really started opening my eyes. God, what must it be like to never be able to have that, you know, to not know if you have a next meal coming or something like that, or not know. I posted recently about how they're, I think it was California, it was making it illegal to park anywhere between, basically, so it's to stop the people that are living in their cars.
Right, their cars are even trailers now. They don't even want you to live in your house trailer.
Yeah, so you already can't loiter. You already
right.
can't stand on the street. So where
are you supposed to go?
Where are you to be? You have to have somewhere to exist. But I think they just want these people to go away. And unfortunately, I think it's because it's a reminder. It's a very ugly reminder of this awful system we've developed,
right.
where the vast majority of people must lose. We have like a casino economy where the vast majority has to lose in order for those few to win.
Right. Well, what did you think about Trump's tax cut,
yeah.
and his economic advisor quitting yesterday over the tariffs situation?
Well, I think, you know, I don't, at this point, they're trying to figure Trump out is
good luck.
I don't know. He's just a lampoon, almost a cartoonish figure that would almost not be believed, you know, if someone invented him. But his advisor was just one of his typical awful Goldman Sachs advisors, I believe, Gary Cohn. So good riddance there. But knowing
right.
Trump, he'll just replace him with some other insider. He won't put an outsider in. The tariffs, it's not that I'm a huge fan of tariffs, but at least this is one thing Trump talked about, because we do have to do something about our trade policies. I don't know if this is going to work, but certainly the establishment is upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And knowing Trump again, he'll probably back off or something.
All right. I think he just throws a lot of the stuff out there to distract from the investigations.
Yeah.
But it causes so much damage worldwide every time he opens his mouth.
Yeah, he really, he just, like I said, I don't, he almost appears like he's got early onset of Alzheimer's. I don't know what he's doing, because some of his tweets don't make any sense. They have huge spelling errors. And
I know. At times I wish he was on
track. How this guy sounded a lot more articulate, 20, 30 years ago. I'm not sure what happened to him, but...
Right. Maybe he was cloned.
And I don't think anybody that was attracted to his talks of policies on trade, because he was really the first one since Perot to talk about these awful trade deals, and they are awful trade deals.
I'm not saying they're not. Years ago, I had a great co-host for so many years, but he died under mysterious circumstances, I might add. Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. And maybe 20 years ago, he said that, we needed to put in place tariffs, but that it would never get done. But I don't think he meant 25% right off the cuff.
Trump needs, I think, but he, at this point, he's lost so much credibility with the base that he had that I don't know who he's talking to at this point. He would have so many things to repair as far as his reputation to do anything, but we definitely, NAFTA was an awful deal, the World Trade allowing right. countries like China to join the World Trade Organization. Free trade is a nice concept, but you can't, again, when you have an equity between countries, when you have a country like Mexico, which I believe we had like a $1 billion surplus in trade at the time that we signed NAFTA, and I think it's something like $30 billion trade deficit or some.
All right. NAFTA was a mistake. I remember years ago interviewing the author of a great book called Whose Trade Organization? And everybody that did vote for Trump, even the few people that I actually respected, I was shocked, were defending him because he pulled out of the TPP. But what they're not paying attention to is he's reconsidering it now.
Yeah, what he's done so far, that's the only thing he did that really was good right off. But I still have my suspicions about that, because they're talking about when he reconfigures NAFTA, whenever they do that, he could just put some of their terrible provisions of the TPP in there. So, and knowing Trump, what he's done so far, he hasn't exactly kept those campaign promises. But I don't think you can have an equal. You can't be an equal footing with a third world nation that has great poverty like Mexico. They're not an equal trading partner, and we see what's happened when we tried to. If you want to have the free trade with the nations of Europe, Canada, that's fine. We're pretty much on equal footing, so that would work. But you can't have it with countries like Mexico or a totalitarian regime like China, where they're paying slave wages. And you see what has happened with that. You can't possibly trade on an equal basis with a nation like China, because we can't compete as much as our leaders would like to. Eventually, maybe they will, if things keep going that way. Well, maybe they will pay people 30 cents a day or something and have them live in stacked bunk beds like it happens in the parts of China now. But if we want to cling to any kind of semblance of a first world status, that's one of the things one of the many things we have to change. But our trade policies have been disastrous, no doubt about that.
Right. Well, I don't know if you got to watch the video of the multi-billionaire Wilbur Ross trying to explain the tariffs by holding up a can of Campbell soup and a beer can, saying what percentage of a penny the cost of tin is going to go up. When you have a man who's known as the bankruptcy king, who's a multi-billionaire, who can barely stand up. I mean, he's like 86. I don't even know how. I don't even have the patience to listen to him. What was your reaction? Because I was watching it and I said, what's America's reaction to this guy, giving us this bullshit?
I just would automatically assume that whatever he's espousing is, I'm going to take the other side. But normally I think the establishment is clearly they've always counseled against protectionism, as they call it, which is really, and I try to tell people all the time, it's not that, yes, of course, I don't want products prices to go. I don't want the price of products to go up. Americans already don't have any discretionary income. They sure don't want to pay more for everyday items like soup and things like that. But the idea, hopefully, if something like this is implemented, industry would start coming back. So some of those factories, especially if you started penalizing them with taxes for going offshore, which should be done, you need to force them back. Into America, and if you have to, give them tax credits to bribe them to do the right thing. But we have to, if those products get, people say, well, that's yesterday, it's old technology. Well, it might be, but those factories exist somewhere. They exist in countries where they're using slave labor. if they existed here in America, as long as you're still making those products,
right. You
bring back a lot of jobs and a lot of jobs that hopefully would pay at least something near to what they used to, because a lot of people that never went to college in America that lived nice lives,
mm-hmm.
and worked in factories, had good benefits,
right. Pension,
and were able to have a middle-class life, and that just doesn't exist anymore.
No, it doesn't. But people still, you know, like I said to you earlier, they still want to believe the myth. So I had gotten a story this week that inequality is growing under Trump. I'm not surprised. And, you know, all those jobs he promised, you know, they can't get anybody after these ICE sweeps to do meatpacker jobs, slaughterhouse jobs, pickers in the field. We're losing food all over the place. Americans are not showing up for those jobs.
Well, I don't know why that would be, but I think that, again, it's just, it's the main issue should always be that the jobs that are out there are not being paid enough. And I like to use the example, I'm using it all the time, I don't think I told on my show, but I talked to somebody recently who I know, who's a friend, who was a cashier at Safeway back in the early 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
He was making $17 an hour then, which it translates to $35,000, I think it was, a year. Back then, in the early 80s, I looked on a chart. $35,000 today would translate into $112,000. So if we had kept up with what the pay rates back then for a cashier at a widespread grocery store, a cashier at a grocery store like Safeway would make it over $112,000. Instead, they make about $8 an hour now. Same job, same company. And lots of other companies that used to pay their employees a living wage, and I knew their fathers when I was growing up in the 1960s and the 1970s. I knew lots of the fathers that worked at Sears and Montgomery Ward's and Woodward and Lothrop's and stores like that, that a lot of them got out of business. Just working behind counters or, you know, selling vacuum cleaners, just common retail jobs, and they were able to buy a single-family home, their wife didn't have to work, and they had as many kids as they wanted. They led a middle-class life. No one talks about that.
I do. You do.
Exactly. Well, you know, not if people get to hear us.
Right. But you know what? You're right, because I knew a lot of people when I lived in New York that worked in supermarkets, and they made great money. That was like a coveted job.
Yeah, and I think it. So the more and more I study, but I mean, I certainly wasn't kind to him in hidden history, but the more I study, so many of our problems go back, and I think Reagan was kind of similar to Trump in a way. He wasn't as much of a buffoon, but I think he was just kind of clueless, and I don't think he really was responsible for much of what went on in his administration. He may not even have understood what was going on, because he definitely did have early onset of Alzheimer's. But so much of this started under Reagan. I mean, we talk about the grocery stores. I think you can just look back and know that they had a very vibrant union at one time, and when Reagan stood up to the air traffic controllers early in his administration, for whatever reason, a bunch of blue-collar workers that should have known better loved that. Yeah, give it to them. Give it to those damn union guys.
Right.
And you saw what happened. For whatever reason, that seemed to cripple labor in this country. We still have never recovered from that, and that's just one of them.
No, I mean, there are lots of right. Well, they're still trying to destroy what little unions are left.
Yeah, they don't want any, and that's why a cashier was making what would be equivalent to $112,000 a day today, back then, because of the union. So without that union, and unions, just the fact that the threat of unions lifted everyone's wages. I never worked for a union, but my wages were always higher then because there was always that threat. And, you know, you had to keep up with what the union boys were getting.
Right.
And we used to always say, yeah, I don't want to work for a union. I don't want to pay dues. But we knew we were making pretty much what they were making.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as you said, they've crippled the unions. Unions exist, but they're toothless. They're people that pay dues to them are not paid well in most cases. They don't have the benefits have been completely eradicated. Another story I can tell you, I just want people to understand how much this country has changed. And I'm not trying to say go back to the good old days or anything like that, but that economically, there was a huge difference. I was talking to my sisters a few weeks back, and we were talking about one of their neighbors and one of my cousins. I know them both, and both of them had, you know, mainstream jobs. I mean, lower middle class, nothing special at all. both of them, when they quit their respective positions, one of their perks was free health care for life. Wow. They didn't pay for Medicare. And this was, that was a common common type of benefit mm-hmm. back then. If you had a decent job and you'd been there a long time, and people look at you now and they don't believe that. I said, can you imagine what a benefit that would be?
Right. Well, that's how that's how the job mentality was sold to Americans.
Yeah, they tried to. Companies used to
we'll
compete,
give you
and they
this,
tried
we'll
to
give
use
you
to
that.
Say, hey, these are the benefits we're giving you.
Right. We'll give you this. We'll give you that. Because listen, it wasn't that long ago, and you know, I grew up in Brooklyn, in an Italian neighborhood. And pretty much everybody's parents or grandparents owned their own business.
Yeah.
Nobody worked for anybody. Okay. And then along came, you know, these big buildings in New York and insurance companies and this and that. And, you know, they gave you, it was standard to get a raise, whether you deserved it or not, every 3 months. Mm-hmm. Then they gave you free health insurance. And I mean, it was great health insurance. You had all kinds of perks. You know, they were things you knew. You didn't even have to worry about going for a review once a year or begging for a raise. It was something that it was automatic. And that's how they suckered people into leaving their independence and being entrepreneurs and having their own business and being, you know, a pencil pusher.
And it was just, we've lost so much. And I use the term gradualism so much to people, whether it's in the political world or something like a job market.
Right.
It's like the slow boiling frog analogy. You know, the frog's in the pan. He doesn't realize he's boiled until he's boiled. You know, he doesn't realize the water's getting increasingly warmer. This is what happens to Americans. They chip away a little bit. They've chipped away year after year, decade after decade, especially since the 80s, so that things we once took for granted.
Right. I figure this is why they want all old people to die or kill our Medicare and our Social Security, because we remember. We're witness to, you know, the time the way it used to be.
You're right. And pretty soon there won't be that many left that do remember it, because the only people that will remember it at that time will be the top, 1%, but maybe the top 20% that run this mess for them.
Right.
They're doing well.
They never seem to die. They always seem to live to be 98 when everybody else is dead by 70.
First of all, they don't have the stress that the rest of us do.
Right.
Paycheck to paycheck, wondering, oh my God, I got another car repair. How am I going to pay for this? How am I going to get to work? And it's there's so many things that, and nobody talks about that. I mean, look, Bernie Sanders' campaign touched a little on it.
Right.
I mean, he touched about paying a little, but it was all kind of rhetoric about let's raise the minimum wage, which of course should be raised. But they need to talk about the bigger, the kind of things I'm talking about is, you know, why did these jobs pay so much more back then? Any jobs, because now they'll smear you. I mean, they not only do, I mean, we've talked about that, you know, you talked about the Americans not wanting to do certain jobs with the fields and all that, but they would smear you now for jobs, for those retail jobs. Well, they're not supposed to be career jobs. Well, they once were.
Now, starter jobs. They called them starter jobs.
Yeah,
starter McDonald's jobs. Is supposed to, you know, I'm sure you've seen McDonald's ads where they, you know, they send one kid to college on some bullshit thing. And they say these are starter jobs, but you know what? I mean, I haven't been inside a McDonald's in about 15 years. But how many old people are working in McDonald's? Obviously, it's their finishing jobs too.
Yes, and that's what it's become. And it's tragic, and it's not. But they will smear jobs, not necessarily, because basically fast food jobs back then, they really were for teenagers.
Of course.
So they were for teenagers, and it was great. They exist. It was kind of a cool job, and in those days, again, that's another little perk. If you worked at one of those places, you got free food.
Right.
And at the end of the night, usually, I mean, I knew someone that worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken back in the day, and at the end of the shift, at the end of her shift, she would have buckets of fried chicken that they were just going to throw out, and now they'd worry about lawsuits and stuff, but she'd bring it and, you know, give us chicken. We'd love it. You know, we thought it was a great little perk. And so even something like that for young people, at least they got a little bit out of it, and they knew that they weren't going to be stuck there forever.
Right. Well, you know, I know a young person that was working for one of these big food restaurant chains, worked there for 5 years conscientiously, took a break. The boss told her to take a break, grab a cup of soup and take a break, and she did. And then because she didn't immediately pay for it, after 5 years, her reward was they fired her on the spot.
Oh, God.
Like she was stealing a cup of soup.
You couldn't even write. I mean, this is something I talk about Dickens a lot, because people should reread Dickens. I mean, because he was one of the first famous people to make everyone aware of the disparity of how awful poverty was. And of course, he was talking about England in his day, but it can certainly serve as a lesson to what's going on here now, because the things he talked about, and that's almost the story out of Dickens. I mean, you know, like Oliver Twist, can I have another, sir? You know, can I have, like, what?
I know.
He wants another? That sounds very much like that. But the stuff Dickens talked about, debtors' prisons. I mean, he wrote an entire book.
Right.
What this book was about, the being in debtors' prison. They're bringing debtors' prisons back. They're very popular. They're everywhere now.
Oh, yeah. And just so my audience knows, in case you want to boycott, it's the Darden Corporation, who owns Seasons 51, Olive Garden, and a whole bunch of other substandard restaurants, as far as I'm concerned. But if we don't expose these people and we keep supplying them with our dollars, if you don't do the homework on every dollar you spend in whatever kind of business, you're contributing to the problem. And that's why I've told my audience for years, Donald, vote with your dollars.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to take a short break. So hold that thought. Hold that thought. Donald and I will be right back. Hi, this is Maria. I don't often get to talk directly to the listeners here on the Gary Noll Network, but I felt like doing that today. I know a lot of you really enjoy my show, but you might not know that I do 4 shows a week over at my website, maria.net. So if you're loving the show you get to hear on Sunday, come on over to my site and subscribe, because I've got hundreds of hours of great shows on pretty much every topic in the universe. And that, again, is maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. And now we can get back to this excellent show. Thanks. Okay, welcome back to the show. I'm speaking with Donald Jeffries, the author of Survival of the Richest. I'm not going to tell you to buy yourself a copy. I'm going to tell you to buy a dozen copies and give them to everybody. Maybe, Donald, you should send a copy to Bernie Sanders. He's still fighting for universal health care.
He has a copy.
Oh, okay, good. Because I saw yesterday he's still fighting for full universal health care. He doesn't give up. I wanted to discuss this meme that I copied. I actually thought you might have written it, but it wasn't yours. It was for somebody else on Facebook. And I think it's very interesting. The average U.S. rent is $1,234 a month. For rent to cost less than a quarter of income, as suggested, you'd need to make $4,924 a month. At 40 hours a week, that's $30.77 an hour. The federal minimum wage is 7.25.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of young people that have gotten their own apartments, and $1,200 is cheap, even in Phoenix, even in a scummy neighborhood in Phoenix. $1,200 is, if you're lucky, you're going to find that. So here we have adults who can't afford to move away from their parents, or they can't afford to live on their own and actually grow. And I remember when I was in school, when we actually were taught economics, they had told us that you should never spend more than a quarter of your income on your rent.
Right.
Most people today say they're spending 50% on their rent.
And that's, again, it goes back to the issue of not being paid enough. And that's the reason behind everything. But I'm sure you've heard the statistics. I keep talking about it over and over again. People probably get sick of hearing about it. But I think the most glaring statistic in America today is that half the population, 50%, make less than $27,000 a year. It's half the country. So half the country wouldn't qualify for that rent. They really can't live anywhere except in the, you know, sharing, staying at home with their parents, sharing quarters with others and so forth. To go out and have their own apartment, certainly home ownership is.
Right.
I'm a licensed realtor. I have been for a long time, and I see what happens in my industry is where you don't have the starter homes anymore, because the homes that are out there, again, you have that glaring 80% of the people that would love to live in some of these older townhouses, for instance, that maybe don't have as many bathrooms, haven't been updated as much, but they don't qualify for anything.
Right.
So who do you sell them to? Because the ones at the top, the 20% that do qualify, turn their noses up at those properties. They want something newer and better, and they can afford it. So
right. Well, you know, that's another big important part that you cover in your book, which really grinds my nerves, is poor people pay more for everything. Everything based on a credit score screws these people even more, so the poor have no way out.
No, they don't. They pay more for insurance. Barbara Ehrenbeck wrote a good book called Nickel and Dimed, and she talked about how, and I quoted her at length in the book, she talked about how expensive it is to be poor. And it's true. People don't realize that she went through, because she went undercover and worked at some of these low-class jobs. And she talked about just, you know, getting transportation and just the things that you need. And if you're out of work, think about it. If you lose work, or let's say you're underemployed. If you're underemployed and you're working day shift, how do you even find time to apply? If you're that kind of a job, they're not going to let you go on the internet while you're at work and seek another job. By the time you get home, you're tired, you're worn out, and so forth. You're trying to, especially if you have kids, it's just, people can figure it out. It's not an easy process anymore. I try to tell people that are older people that are still living in the 70s and 80s and even 90s, you can't just walk into a store or an establishment and get a job. Anytime you walk in, they're going to tell you apply online. And you have an arduous process where sometimes you have a 200-question quiz. These were jobs at places like Kmart. Often retail jobs are going to pay $8 an hour. And you have to go through those kind of ropes. And a lot of times you have a couple hundred people applying at the same time, because the sad fact is there are a lot more people looking for jobs than there are jobs available.
Right. So, and you're lucky if they call you back, because they get so many submissions online.
Right. You're lucky if you get an interview. And then when you have the interview process, and I can't imagine some of these awful jobs like fast food and things like that. You basically walked in the old days and they hired you. When can you start?
Right. Now it's three interviews.
What kind of resume do you need for McDonald's? Now you need a resume for everything.
Well, I mean, I know, like I said, you know, you apply for a job at a restaurant, it's three interviews before you get to work. Just even if you want to be a busser.
And the interviews are such a grueling process where you have a group interviewing you and they ask you questions where I think I'm pretty sophisticated, but I wouldn't know how to answer some of these questions.
All right.
My kids would, you know, show me some of these questions. I said, I don't know what the right answer is there. I don't know what they're looking for, because it's a psychological thing. But you want to make yourself look good, but you don't want to make yourself look unrealistic. It's senseless. These are not positions at Google or somewhere where you're going to make a lot of money and have great benefits. One of the few companies that is going to do that, those high-paid positions. But the vast majority of companies are looking to get as cheap labor as possible. And that's why I talk about we need to focus on the fact that there are 30 million slaves in the world today, including 10 million in India, which has taken over IT industry with the H-1B visa worker program, which Trump did not eliminate, as we promised he would. But no one talks about boycotting India. What about their 10 million slaves? Slavery, which is, I think that's the end game here. I think that the people, the 1%, ultimately really miss the good old days. They may not want a plantation, literally, but I think they miss having that absolutely free labor, and I think they would love to have actual slaves. And apparently there are 30 million of them around the world today, so no one seems to object to that. So they may get their wish. China comes pretty close.
Well, you know, we do okay here in our prisons for profit. Talk about free labor for all these corporations.
Yep.
You know, I while I was flipping through your book again this morning before the show, I tripped across something. I said, okay, I've got to throw this one out there too. Right now we have in, you know, Dumbville, USA, people actually wanting Oprah to be president. Oprah supposedly is waiting for a sign from God. And then I tripped across that bit in your book about those gifts that she gave to her audience.
That's the rock, and that's the rock star mentality. I mean, Oprah, like the rock stars that ask their audience to pay tickets and donate to the charity their cause, while all they do is play and read the words of publicity. Oprah donated cars that were given to her by GM or whatever car company. She was actually called out. I was amazed at some people, and I have the quotes in there, I think Chicago Tribune or somebody actually called her out on it. And she's as deluded as any 1% politician. She just came around and said, why should I feel bad? Who cares who paid for them? Well, GM theoretically should have gotten the credit and the good publicity. They're the ones that gave the cars away, and she wouldn't even pay the taxes, because what happened is some of those people had to turn these gifts down because the taxes were thousands of dollars and they couldn't afford the taxes.
Right, and she didn't care.
And they said, well, no, you have a choice. You either take the gift or you don't. But Oprah could have just said, you know what, this is pocket change for me. Of course I'll pay so these people get it for free. No, she didn't do that.
Well, she sold out a long time ago. You know, a lot of money seems to make, you know, I'm trying to think who said it. A good person with money is still going to be a good person, but a bad person with money is going to still be a bad person with money.
Exactly.
But everybody buys the hype from her, from all these movie stars, these rockers, like that Criminal Bono. You know, why ask us when we don't have $2 to our name to contribute to these causes when they're billionaires? Why don't they pay for it?
Yeah, and that's one of the hardest things to explain to people. I got in an argument with some guy on Facebook about Bono, and, you know, he obviously likes U2. Okay, I understand. It's nothing against their music or anything. I'm not talking about him as a musician or anything, but how do you support somebody that has talk about a racketeer. That sounds like an organized crime shakedown where over 98% of the money that's donated to him goes to their overhead cost of salaries or whatever he's paying to people on his board of directors, which, you know, I talked a lot about in the book too, these invisible salaries that they pay to these other bigwigs, and they're like part-time jobs for them, yet they tell you, don't steal a pen.
Mm-hmm.
File clerk, you better not take a pen, or, you
right.
know, in the case of the McDonald's hit, well, you didn't pay for that soup. I mean, that's the mentality, but they're paying Al Gore, Apple pays him $633,000 a year to attend 5 meetings. Is there anybody that could be worth that kind of thing? What could you
Nobody.
Possibly do?
Nobody. Well, you know, here we have, you know, Ben Carson in charge of HUD and whatnot. And, you know, he says that, you know, poverty is a choice. Okay. And he blames, you know, how he always blames everything on the poor. And yet, at the same time, he spent $165,000 for office furniture, and he wouldn't have returned any of it if he didn't get caught.
So well, they're very, it's amazing that the people, in, whether it's blacks or whoever that rise, and it usually is black people that in positions like that that actually maybe rose from circumstances. As you know, I had a deleted chapter in Survival of the Richest where I went into the backgrounds of celebrities and bank officials, corporate leaders, and so forth. I gave so many examples, and I really had to, it was a long chapter, and they decided not to include it, so I published it on my blog where people can read it if they're interested.
All right.
You would not believe how few of people in the public eye didn't come from at least upper middle class. How many of their fathers were judges and
right.
things like that, and politicians. It's incredible. And so it's very, I think, self-serving for people that do rise
right.
to say, well, Ben Carson has to know how few people rise from poverty
right.
in this country. There's no such thing as upward mobility anymore, unless, again, if you're an athlete or an entertainer, perhaps. But anywhere else, if you see some, brain surgeon or the president of the CEO or something like that that's really successful, odds are they came from a wealthy family, or at least a
right.
middle-class family that could provide that kind of stability. And that's why the original title of my book was called You Didn't Build That, which is one of the few good things I ever thought Obama said. He
right.
took a lot of flack for saying that, but he was exactly right, because nobody builds anything on their own. There's just the factor of luck. Luck is involved so much. Just being good-looking. I mean, how many people are just good-looking, especially females, and it... You can look at the statistics. I had that in the book as well. Or just being taller, you're
right.
more successful. Being
right.
blonde, you're more successful. I mean, ridiculous things, but that's just the way it is. And that's luck. You can't make yourself taller. But people don't want to hear that for whatever reason. They want to believe so much that, you know, you're worth what you're, you know, you get what you're worth. You know, you get what you deserve,
yeah,
and you're responsible for it. And that's just not true. There's a lot of factors involved.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the big topics I usually discuss with my friends is the problem with healthcare in this country is we have medicine for profit. And I don't know if you've seen the new show called The Resident, but I highly recommend it because they show this big hospital in Georgia. And when the administrators come through, they change the policy to where if a person has insurance, you have to do all these diagnosis tests to raise the money that the hospital will make. And if they're uninsured, they basically tell their doctors, give them an aspirin and send them home.
Exactly.
So
again,
it's a really good expose.
When did that change? I mean, 50 years ago, if you watch old television shows or old movies, the doctors made house calls. It was a completely different system, and nobody... I guess if you were destitute, if you were incredibly poor, but there weren't as many poor people, certainly in the post-war boom era when everybody was pretty much lifted up by the unfortunate growth of the military-industrial complex, but it did give baby boomers like us a great childhood and a great standard of living for a while. But you had an entirely different situation. I don't think many people back then thought that if they had an illness or something that it was going to be financially devastating, and that would kill them, wipe them out. Now, that's
now you
the
can't. You don't just worry about the illness; you worry about the cost of the illness, probably first over the illness.
Exactly.
But you know, I remember when I was a kid, doctors coming to the house.
Yeah.
Nobody had insurance. You didn't need insurance. Doctors were reasonable.
I sometimes wonder how did the world run then? But it was much simpler.
Better.
And again, I want to sound like a crotchety old guy that wants people to get off my lawn and things like that. But it's not like they're obviously things should be so much better today with the technology that we have and what the knowledge that we should have at this point. We should have greater life expectancy, medical technology, and everything else, energy, all of this, but we're not seeing any of it. And you know, I go over that in my book, how it's just, we have this fantastic technology, and Hollywood advertises it, and our leaders like to talk about it, but it doesn't show up in the lives of the average people. If it's there, we don't get it. I mean, Henry Kissinger may have some super technology that's allowing him to be obese still and be in his 90s and walk around. So I'm a the average people. He's a 1%er. The average man, Jimmy Carter, recovered from brain cancer in just record time. Again, unheard of. But so these are people at the top. But for the average person, they're just not getting, whether it's still driving their same gas guzzlers, the infrastructure being so awful. You know, we talked about that, and that's another thing that was attractive that Trump talked about. He was the first candidate that said what I've been saying for years, what terrible shape America's in. Look, and in his great New York style, that was one of his most attractive quotes, where he said, "We're a joke with our airports and bridges and roads." And everybody out on the street knows that's driving the roads. But we didn't hear anybody say it. Now, of course, nothing's been done about it, and the odds are nothing will.
Right.
But we definitely need a desperate overhaul of the infrastructure, and we're just not seeing that. And it's because I think it's that nothing is done, whether it's economically or politically or anything, that will help the average person out on the street. I have a quote that's hidden history, too. Hopefully it'll be coming out here in the near-distant future. Skyhorse agrees to publish it. But I have a quote from William Henry Harrison, which most people haven't heard. He's the shortest-lived president that far back, and he left a quote on the record that I found, and I don't have it exactly, but it was something like, "During my political career, I've come to the conclusion that everything that's done politically is to benefit the rich and hurt the poor." Something like that, but it was just profound that it came that long ago, and I think everybody, that's basically what it's done. Who is this going to help? Is it going to make our profits go up? Is it going to make my bonus bigger?
Right.
That's really the only, I think that's the only concern corporate America has at this point, where...
Right, but if you look at this tax giveaway, that's what I call it, most of the huge corporations that got those tax cuts, outside of a few pathetic bonuses to a couple of workers, reinvested, just bought their own stock. They brought the price down, and then they went in and swooped it up with the gift that the poor are giving to them.
Exactly, and I'm investing in the stock market. I'm luckily I still have somewhat of a plan because I've been in the company a long time. But I'm at the top on that. I think I put that on Facebook. I think it's something like 87%. Something like the top 10% have 85% of the stock in America or something. It's just like all the other statistics. So
right.
Stock market, it may affect people like me to some degree, but...
Yeah, but when the market goes up, you know, Trump thinks when the market goes up, that's a good sign that the economy is doing well. But most Americans, myself included, we're not involved in the stock market. I don't have money to invest. I barely get by. Do you know what I mean?
But for those of us out there, I mean, whatever's happening there, the conventional pensions that used to exist have been all but eliminated, and now the companies that still have anything have a 401k plan, which you're lucky if they match it, so they do put something in it. It's better than nothing, but still the worker is responsible for putting the however much he wants to put in there, and then you're instead of having a guaranteed pension as in the past, you're subject to the whims of the marketplace. And as you stated, I mean, the people at the top clearly, I think, know when they're going to decide to plunge it.
Oh, yeah. Bob Chapman said it on my show years ago. He says, "They're coming for your IRAs next. Get your money out."
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and then Social Security. I mean, there's no end.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Most people don't realize about Social Security. I think we've talked about it before, is that it's the most regressive tax imaginable. Only the first $119,000 of income is taxed. The first. so that the Bill Gates of the world is paying whatever income he declares, and people don't realize, again, that's why I love Huey Long so much, is because Huey Long talked about wealth. He didn't necessarily talk about just income, and this is before the growth of these huge tax-free foundations. Right? If you to really redistribute the wealth, you have to look at how much income, how much money are in those tax-free foundations, and therefore people like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, these guys can say, yeah, raise the tax on the rich, tax us more. Well, Warren Buffett owes billions of dollars in back taxes on his businesses. He's not paying his pay, but he's, it's like Briar Rabbit saying, throw me in the briar patch, because they're getting good publicity. The journalists don't analyze what they're saying. Wait a minute, well, if you want to be taxed so much more, why do you owe so many taxes? Because they know they're not going to be subject to it because it's hidden in those tax shelters, and you're never going to see Donald Trump or anyone else come up with a tax plan that wants to audit those foundations, strip their tax-free status and so forth, because that's where the great amount of their wealth is. That's why you see every 1% pretty much has some kind of foundation.
Right. Well, you know, there's another saying that says, don't ever think that the rich are going to allow you to vote their power away.
Well, no, of course, man. We just recently saw the newest number one guy in the world, Jeff Bezos of Amazon. Amazon paid no taxes at all last year.
I know, and they're going to get a tax return. So
yeah, I mean, it's like, how does that not... I mean, that's all the left should be talking about. But the Democrats won't talk about it because Bezos is ostensibly an establishment liberal. So he's down with their rhetoric. But he didn't pay any taxes, so if you're...
Well, we still had 19 Democrats vote with the Republicans against the Dodd-Frank bill.
Yeah, and they just... Both the right and the left have changed so much in the years, but basically, especially since, again, the 80s or so, when Reagan transformed the right in America, or not Reagan, but under his auspices, under his name, the right was changed from anti-communist, smaller government thing to this greed is good, anti-terrorism, Ayn Rand disciples. That's all the right is now.
Right.
And the left was transformed from being... for the working guy, it's a fair pay, pro-union, all that stuff, to social justice warriors, that their entire concern is, what did you say?
Right.
Oh, that guy got fired. Cool. Oh, we tore a Confederate statue down, so now all black people can celebrate. That's their mindset. It's like, it's ridiculous. They don't care at all about civil liberties, and I think that's why I've had a hard time getting so many on the left interested in survival of the richest, because this is not a concern for them. I mean, maybe if I could demonstrate that transgenders were hardest hit by it or something, then they might pay attention briefly, but that's they're just in that world. They don't care about the fact that 80% of Americans are getting screwed in one way or another, and 50% have nothing. They have $27,000, they make less than $27,000, and they have less than 1% of the collective wealth. That's half of the country. That should be the top story.
I agree.
In politics. But it's just not. You don't hear anybody else talking about it.
Well, I talk about it all the time, so maybe there's something wrong with me. But, I the best way I could describe this book is it shows you who and what the problems are. And I think that it would solve the left and right fighting each other to understand that they have to take their fight to the people that are in control of everything and don't give a shit about the rest of us.
Yeah, I think they would. I mean, I remember, you know...
I would end divide and conquer, I think, in nanoseconds.
Yeah, but this goes back... I remember during the Reagan era, arguing with the blue-collar workers I was working with at that time. They were all so pro-Reagan, and they kept getting so excited about the tax cuts, and I said... You realize he actually raised your taxes. Do you even look at, because you raised Social Security taxes, which affects you.
Right.
He cut the 1% from like 72% to 28%. I mean, imagine the effect that had on the economy. And raised the lowest rate, I think, from 13% to 15%. But these idiots were so enamored of his rhetoric, and they wanted to get the welfare.
They vote personality in this country instead of, what are they actually going to do? Where's their background check? You know, how come we don't have more proper vetting of everybody that's president and in this administration?
Yeah, and I think that's why Trump appeals to the people he appeals to.
It's just sad.
They hate the establishment. They hate the fake news. They hate CNN and all that. So this is the first guy, as stupid as he sounds, saying it most of the time. He's the first guy that's out there just blurting out stuff like you know, your average blue-collar worker might do.
Right.
Like, yeah, give it to them. Yeah, and they don't really care how it impacts their lives.
I
know. It's kind of like, on the left, I said, they would be going crazy about throwing somebody in jail, and they're not saying, well, that's a slippery slope. You know, you really want to start policing speech and thought like that? Well, okay, what if somebody doesn't like what you say? You know, I always say, I don't want them throwing, whether it's YouTube or anything like that, man, I don't want them, you know, or guns or something like that. You know, if they want not give guns to the mentally ill, well, that sounds like a reasonable thing, but what if they say, you know, you and I, Maria, you know, with the crazy stuff we're talking, we shouldn't have a gun. I mean, come on. What they do. Conspiracy kooks having guns, it's a slippery slope, and that's why it's kind of, I find any of those kind of infringements on liberties to be troublesome, but most people are just, they're not looking at the big picture.
No, they're not. They all need to reread 1984 and Brave New World in a hurry. Donna, we're out of time. I do want to thank you so much for joining me again today.
Thanks so much for having me, Ray, and I really appreciate all your support.
Oh, you've got it, and I'm sure we'll do it again.
Always. Anytime. Thank you.
Take care. Donald Jeffries. I'll put a link here to his WordPress blog and, again, the book, Survival of the Richest. And I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.